Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome, curious minds. We are diving deep today into, well, one of the last great mysteries of human experience, dreaming.
It really is, isn't it?
Yeah, if you've ever woken up from a really bizarre dream, you know the kind, maybe you're flying or trying to run but can't move, and just thought, what on earth did that mean? Then this deep dive is definitely for you.
Exactly. Because we're sort of setting aside, for today at least, centuries of, well, mystical thinking and psychoanalysis about dreams. You know, the idea that they're hidden codes.
Right, hidden hieroglyph.
We're jumping straight into the hard science, largely thanks to the work of neurobiologist J. Allen Hobson, a truly revolutionary figure here.
So our mission today, really, is to give you a shortcut to understanding this huge shift in how we study consciousness. We're moving away from Freud's couch, essentially, and into the lab with EEG machines. We're not asking about secret coded messages from your subconscious anymore. The question now, the one Hobson really pushed, is what are dreams biologically? What's happening in the brain every single night as a measurable event?
It's such a radical shift. It's about replacing speculation, I mean, pure guesswork sometimes, with actual physiology.
Yeah.
We can talk about dreams using chemistry, electricity.
Objective stuff.
Objective stuff, exactly.
Okay, so let's unpack the scientist who really drove this, Dr. J. Allen Hobson, because understanding him is key, right? He wasn't just theorizing from an armchair.
Absolutely not. He was a really prominent figure at Harvard Medical School. And what made him unique was that he bridged these two worlds that historically didn't talk much.
Mm-hmm.
Clinical psychiatry,
yeah.
You know, dealing with subjective feelings, experiences.
The inner world.
And laboratory neuroscience, which demands hard objective proof.
Yeah.
He spent, what, over 5 decades on this?
Yeah, incredible dedication. And his credentials matter so much here. He didn't just interpret what people said about their dreams. He actually measured what was happening in their brains using EEG, brain imaging. Rigorous scientific methods.
He studied subjective experience objectively. That's the core of it.
That ability to connect those two, it made him one of the key figures, maybe the key figure, in really revolutionizing sleep science. He literally took dreaming off the couch and put it under the microscope, so to speak.
He insisted on it. If we want to understand consciousness, even sleeping consciousness, we have to use the tools of science.
Mm.
No way around it.
And the outcome of all that work, it's a complete rethink. Hobson's work, especially in his big books, really aimed to replace those old untestable ideas, Freud's included, with a solid evidence-based neurobiological understanding.
And the central pillar of that is his activation synthesis hypothesis. That's the big idea.
Mm-hmm.
Basically says dreams are not these disguised wishes or secret messages needing a decoder ring, like popular culture often suggests.
Okay, hold on. So if I dream my old cat is suddenly wearing a tie and giving me terrible stock tips.
Yeah.
That's not some deep hidden wish about finances or, I don't know, feline fashion.
Uh-huh. Probably not. According to Hobson, it's more like your brain doing its best to create some kind of story, even a bizarre one, out of random, chaotic electrical bursts.
Random bursts? Where do they come from?
They fire off automatically deep down in the brainstem, specifically during REM sleep. That's the key stage.
But wait a second. If the input is just random electrical noise, genuinely chaotic, how can the resulting dream have any meaning? Aren't we just swapping one mystery Freud's code for another, like, biological randomness?
But that's the elegance of it. The meaning isn't in the random activation part. It's in the synthesis part.
Okay.
Think of it like this. You've got neurons firing randomly in the brainstem. That's the activation. It sends all these noisy signals up to the forebrain. Now, the forebrain, our higher level thinking part, it's a natural storyteller. It hates randomness. So it gets this chaotic input and immediately tries to weave it into some kind of narrative, pulling on recent memories, emotions, preoccupations, whatever it has handy to make sense of the nonsense.
So the story it creates, the synthesis, isn't random, even if the trigger was.
Exactly. The story reflects what's already on your mind, emotionally speaking. That's why Hobson argued the meaning is transparent, not hidden. It directly shows your current emotional state, maybe anxiety about work, excitement about something.
So my anxious dream about the cat giving bad stock tips just reflects my underlying anxiety, maybe about a presentation or something. It's not a symbol of it.
Precisely. The feeling is the message, not the weird imagery itself. Which brings us to, you know, the big figure we have to mention, Freud.
Right, Sigmund Freud. Can't talk about dream interpretation without him.
We have to acknowledge his historical importance, absolutely. He made dreams a serious topic. But Hobson's critique was pretty sharp.
Yeah, he argued Freud's main concepts, the censor that supposedly disguises dreams, the latent hidden content, the dream work transforming it, they're just scientifically unnecessary.
And worse, untestable. You can't scientifically prove or disprove a hidden sensor at work. How would you measure that?
You can't.
The real scientific progress came much later, 1950s, with Azurinsky and Kleitman discovering REM sleep. That was the game changer.
Because it gave us something objective.
Exactly. The first objective, measurable sign of dreaming. Those rapid eye movements, the temporary muscle paralysis called atonia, and that very active brainwave pattern on the EEG, looking almost like you're awake.
Okay, so once we could reliably see when dreaming happens, we could ask what's causing it. And that brings us back to activation synthesis. Let's break it down. The activation part first. Where does this chaos originate?
It starts deep in the brainstem in a specific area called the pons. Think of the pons as like a control center for sleep cycles. During REM, neurons there just start firing spontaneously, rhythmically, and they send this massive flood of random electrical signals upwards to the cortex, the thinking, perceiving part of the brain.
That's the noise input, and then the synthesis.
That's the forebrain, receiving this jumbled mess and trying its best to impose order. It pulls from memory, recent events, current feelings, and stitches together a narrative. Hobson famously called it making the best of a bad job.
Ha ha, I like that. It's trying to make sense out of nonsense.
And the reason the resulting dreams are so bizarre, so illogical, comes down to the very specific brain chemistry of REM sleep. It's a unique cocktail.
What's in it?
Well, your brain is flooded with acetylcholine. That chemical promotes this activation, the memory access, the vividness.
Okay, so that drives the intensity, but what about the weirdness?
That's because at the same time, crucial chemicals for logic and reality checks are basically switched off. Levels of serotonin and norepinephrine plummet.
And those are important for.
In waking life, they're vital for logical thinking, focused attention, impulse control, telling what's real from what's not. Think of them as the brain's editors or fact-checkers.
And during REM, they're off duty.
Pretty much. So without them, the brain literally can't construct a logical, linear, reality-tested story. The weirdness isn't symbolic, it's chemical.
Wow, okay. That chemical imbalance directly explains so many strange dream features, then, like the intense emotions we feel.
Absolutely, that's linked to the limbic system, especially the amygdala. The brain's emotional core being hyperactive, raw, powerful feelings get generated without the usual filters.
Fear, joy, anger, very potent.
Yep. And the sheer illogical nature of it all, flying one second, suddenly in your childhood home the next. That's largely because the prefrontal cortex is significantly deactivated.
The logic center.
Exactly. The part responsible for planning, reasoning, self-awareness, impulse control. When that's offline, the bizarreness isn't some clever disguise. It's just what happens when the brain's executive functions are temporarily unavailable.
And that's why we just accept impossible things in dreams, like talking animals or flying, because the part that would normally say, "Hang on, that's impossible," is asleep on the job.
Precisely. No critical reflection, no reality testing. It just feels normal in the moment.
It's still kind of hard to swallow sometimes, you know? That feeling of profound meaning I got from dreaming I was debating philosophy with my toaster wasn't profound at all, just chemicals and a sleepy prefrontal cortex.
Yeah, it takes adjustment. But Hobson would call that lawful consciousness. Dreaming isn't random chaos in the experience. It's a distinct state of mind operating under its own specific, predictable neurochemical rules. It follows its own laws.
Okay, that makes sense. It's not less amazing, just amazing in a different way.
Exactly. And that leads us nicely into some of the big themes that run through Hobson's work, beyond just the mechanics.
Yeah, what are the main takeaways here?
Well, the first, and maybe the most fundamental, is that understanding the science doesn't diminish the wonder of dreaming. If anything, it enhances it. You're not less awestruck. You're awestruck by the incredible biological machine that creates these worlds.
It shifts the awe from the mystery to the mechanism.
Beautifully put, it shows the magic of the brain. And related to that, it highlights the brain as fundamentally a meaning-making machine. Its drive to create narrative is so powerful, it builds entire stories from random noise. That says a lot about how we perceive things even when we're awake, doesn't it?
It really does. Okay, what else?
The second big theme is hammering home that idea of transparent meaning. We keep circling back to this because it's so anti-Freudian.
Right, no hidden codes.
No hidden codes. The emotional tone of the dream, the anxiety, the joy, the frustration, that's the direct message. It's an honest readout of your current emotional landscape. If you dream, you're constantly unprepared for an exam. The feeling of unpreparedness is the meaning, not some symbol hidden in the exam paper.
So focus on how you felt in the dream, not what you saw.
That's the advice, yes. Look at the affect. And the third theme is reinforcing that ideal of lawful consciousness. Dreaming isn't just thinking while asleep or some degraded form of waking thought. It's a unique, rule-governed state defined by that specific neurochemistry. It has its own operating system.
And speaking of the physical reality of it all, wasn't there some fascinating work by another researcher, Jouvet, about muscle paralysis?
Yes, Michel Jouvet, the French neurophysiologist.
Yeah.
Crucial work. He pinpointed the area in the brainstem responsible for paralyzing our muscles during REM sleep, that muscle atonia.
And why is that so important?
Because it provides incredibly dramatic proof of how real and intense the brain's commands are during dreams. You see it starkly in people with REM behavior disorder.
What happens to them?
They lack that normal paralysis. So when their brainstem sends out signals to, say, run or fight in a dream, their bodies physically act it out. They might leap out of bed, punch, shout. Yeah. It vividly demonstrates the powerful motor commands being generated even while the conscious logical brain is mostly offline. The dream actions feel totally real to the brainstem.
That's quite something. It really grounds the theory in biology. Now, Hobson had some really quotable lines that sum this all up, didn't he? Things that make it easier to grasp.
He really did. Very concise. My favorite probably captures the core idea. Dreams are not disguised wishes, but transparent revelations of brain activity during sleep. Just cuts right through the old ideas.
Yeah, that's crystal clear. And what about the idea that science ruins the magic?
He had a great counter for that. Science doesn't destroy the magic of dreaming. It reveals the magic of the brain. It redirects the sense of wonder.
I like that one a lot. It reframes it completely.
And another key insight, maybe less of a direct quote, but a core idea, is the brain making the best of a bad job. That explains why dreams feel both familiar, using our memories, and utterly bizarre, trying to link random activations logically.
Okay, so if we're ditching the dream dictionaries and embracing the biology, how does this actually help us in, you know, everyday life? What are the practical applications?
Good question. Practical tip number one flows directly from that transparent meaning idea.
Mm-hmm.
Use your dreams as an emotional barometer.
How so?
Instead of analyzing symbols, what does the falling bridge mean?
Mm.
Track the recurring emotions. If you consistently wake up from dreams feeling anxious or frustrated or maybe even joyful, pay attention to that feeling. It's likely a direct reflection from your limbic system about stresses or positive things happening in your waking life.
So the feeling points you to what needs attention.
Exactly. It's a clue about your underlying emotional state. Much more useful than a symbol dictionary.
Makes sense. Okay, tip two.
This one's about learning and memory. Hobson and many others since emphasize that REM sleep isn't just passive downtime. It plays an active role in memory consolidation.
Strengthening memories.
Yes, and integrating new learning. So if you're studying hard, learning a new skill, trying to remember complex information, getting enough sleep, specifically enough REM sleep, isn't just nice to have. It's actually crucial for your brain to properly process and lock in that new knowledge. That unique REM chemistry helps cement memories.
So pulling an all-nighter before an exam is actually counterproductive for memory.
Very likely, yes. You need the sleep cycle to make the learning stick long-term.
Good to know. And tip three, you mentioned nightmares earlier.
Right. This framework really helps demystify nightmares. They can feel so terrifying and significant. But understanding them as likely the result of a hyperactivated amygdala, your fear center, processing anxiety, maybe feelings of threat, or being trapped, but doing it while you're safely paralyzed in bed.
It makes them less mystically frightening.
Exactly. Knowing the mechanism, it's intense brain activity, yes, but in a safe offline state can help reduce the power they have over you. It lessens the fear of the nightmare itself.
That's genuinely helpful. For me, the most surprising thing digging into Hobson is just the sheer efficiency, almost the brutality of the biological explanation that the crazy logic, the bizarreness we just accept mid-dream is basically down to the prefrontal cortex taking a nap. It's not deep, it's just offline.
Yeah, it's a very direct cause and effect. Not much room for complex psychological maneuvering there.
What about you? What's the lasting insight you take away?
For me, it's the broader point that studying something as subjective, as personal as dreaming can be approached with objective science.
Yeah, yeah.
It shows we can understand even our most private mental experiences through biology, through neurochemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And that connection, understanding how our physical brain creates our mental world,
mm-hmm.
that just deepens my appreciation for this incredible organ we all carry around. It's powerful, complex, and yeah, sometimes pretty silly.
Beautifully said. And that leaves us, and you listening, with a final, perhaps provocative thought to mull over. Haha. If our brains are so fundamentally driven to find meaning, so insistent on creating stories that they literally weave narratives from random electrical noise while we sleep, how much of our waking experience, the stories we tell ourselves about our lives, our interactions, the world, how much of that is also our forebrain working overtime, creating coherence and meaning from what might be incomplete, ambiguous, or even chaotic sensory data?
That's a deep one. How much of waking reality is also a kind of synthesis?
Something to ponder, perhaps, as you drift off tonight. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.